What is up? It is finally debut day, opening day, a week late for the dog days of August, but we're going to take you all the way to the end of the baseball season. I am the voice of a generation and your regular fixture on the Euro Sports Show, Pete Rosato, proudly joined by the man who has made his name known on the backstage brawl, Big Grizz. Welcome to the Dog Days of August podcast.
What's going on, y'all? I'm here to talk baseball, man. We've been talking about doing this for a very long time.
Yeah.
So now that we finally got it off the ground, we got it running. You're going to see us at full strength eventually, but we're here to talk baseball for y'all, man. Opening day just got started. We're a week late, but we're going to get all into it, man.
And we're going to have some real big takes. We're going to talk opening week of baseball, what we thought coming into the season, how that might have changed in that first opening week, and some interesting picks for who do we think way too early picks for division winners, postseason, probably even a World Series winner, Cy Young, MVP. And also, we're going to have some gripes that we've got. I've got an interesting one. I spoke to you about it earlier, Grizz. But let's just leave him with a little bit of a morsel here. I'm wearing my Yankee jersey. Grizz, you've got on the hat. And I'm going to say something that's probably going to alienate a lot of Yankee fans, and I'll talk about it a little bit more later. I'm not a fan of the Core Four. Not a fan of the Core Four. We'll talk about that a little later. Let's start, though, first. Ladies and gentlemen, as Grizz said, we will be at full strength soon. Our third host, the Territorian, Alphonse Stevens, the resident Met fan of our podcast, and probably crying over the fact that the Mets lost once again last night. Not feeling well today, a little under the weather, will be joining us for episode number 2. We're going to make sure that we are at full strength all baseball season. And again, 100% baseball all the time here on the Dog Days of Baseball podcast. But let's start opening week, and let's start at home. What an opening week it was for the Yankees, Grizz. I mean,
beautiful.
Swept the opening series against the hated Houston Astros.
Hated.
At 7-2 right now. And listen, I'd go so far to say I think the Astros have overtaken the Red Sox as the most hated rival team for the Yankees.
Absolutely. I got a hot take about the Astros, and I might as well just say it here. But I do not expect a lot post-Dusty Baker for the Astros this season. I really don't expect a lot. They look sloppy the first 4 games, a lot of errors, a lot of mistakes given up. Pitching was, for the most part, their pitching was pitching for the Astros, which you expect.
Yeah.
But too many errors, they relied on too many other guys to come up big for them, and he didn't show up. Now, on the flip side of it, in that whole series, the one thing that I loved about the Yankees, because they trailed for most of that game. Most of the games, they trailed. Plate discipline.
Yeah.
Plate discipline really saved them in that series. I don't know how you feel about that, but the plate discipline was immaculate.
Well, their offense isn't as prodigious as it used to be.
Mm.
And that's the one thing that we've seen with the Astros. They used to have a decent pitching staff that was pretty good. Their bullpen was really the strength of their team for a very, very long time. And again, this is also a team that is not going to see Justin Verlander for a little while. But as you said, Framber Valdez pitched incredible. Christian Javier pitched pretty well. Hunter Brown, JP France, they've got guys that can pitch. But, you know, Jose Abreu isn't the same masher that we saw in Chicago all those years ago. Altuve is always going to be Altuve. Bregman's going to be Bregman. But the rest of this team, it's kind of like not the same. It's Jeremy Peña, Chaz McCormick, Jake Miles, Kyle Tucker, Yordan Alvarez. It's not what it used to be when they were making those ALCSs, making those World Series. It's just not as prodigious and as scary as it was. And it also seems that they've kind of abandoned a little bit of what their hallmark was. One of the things that was very big about the Houston Astros in these years was their very fundamental way of playing baseball. Very old.
Absolutely.
Station-to-station baseball. They weren't going for the home run. They would wear their pitchers out, as you said, with that discipline. They'd make your guys throw a lot of pitches. They'd get into your bullpen, and they'd strike. And that's that very old-school mentality of baseball. You wear the starter out. You get them out early. You make them go deep into their bullpen early. And we all know that the bullpen pitchers are going to have more weaknesses than the starters. You just don't see that as much anymore out of them. And I do think Dusty, as you said, leaving also played a big impact on that. But, you know, they had their run. They're still a team that can win games. And I think they're going to be dangerous when Verlander comes back. Because, listen, Verlander is like the miracle man as a starter. He reminds me a lot of, like, you know, pre-Yankees Kevin Brown still pitching well into his late 30s. You know, when we talk about guys like a Randy Johnson or Curt Schilling who pitched very, very well into their late 30s, early 40s. Even a guy like a Clemens that pitched very well into their later years. Verlander reminds me a lot of them. And even when Verlander was on the Mets, I mean, short-lived, and yeah, he had some rocky starts here and there, but he started to really settle in right before he was traded again.
Yeah, I agree. I guess when Alfred gets on here, you can talk about the pain of the Mets and going after that big swing, because between him and Scherzer, that was a sure thing last season.
Yeah.
That should have been a sure thing for the Mets. But it just didn't look right for them. It didn't fit well for them. But Verlander, I agree with you. Verlander is still one of those top pitchers when healthy. He is still that Cy Young award-winning, World Series-winning champion that you can look to and get at least, at the very least, 6 Ks, and that's he gets more than that.
Yeah, he'll give you 6 to 7 innings, 6 innings at least.
He'll give you 6 Ks in probably 3 innings, 4 innings, and, you know, that's just him being nice. He can do way better than that, you know, as a healthy pitcher. And there's nothing really fancy about him. He's a very old school type pitcher.
Yeah. Very old school. And again, this was a team in Houston that last year, I mean, they won the division at 90-72. They tied with the team that eventually did win the World Series in the Texas Rangers, who also went 90-72. Mm-hmm. So, you know, 18 games over 500, pretty good. They had the third most wins in the AL behind Baltimore and Tampa Bay. Here's the thing. They do play in a pretty weak division. So that's helpful.
Yeah, that is helpful.
I mean, the only team – I mean, Seattle does not look like they're going to really make a lot of noise this year. Mm-hmm. I don't think that the Los Angeles Angels record right now being above 500, I don't think that's something that's going to stay that way for a very long time. And Oakland is still rebuilding as Oakland does. So – it's really just Houston and Texas in the West.
Yeah, I agree. I got another hot take about the Texans. If the Texans can stay healthy for the most part, they have all their guys back from last year for the most part. But I know they lost some key players, but they also gained some key players in return. They can definitely go back to the World Series. Definitely.
Yeah, and they're 4-1 at home, which, listen – we all know that home field advantage. I mean, you look at the Yankees, right? The Yankees are 7-2, but they're 6-1 away from home. They started on the road. So, you know, it's good when you're able to get that home field advantage, you know, and it's going to be interesting. Again, I don't see the Angels staying above 500. Seattle is 4-5 right now. I kind of see them there. It's the Rangers and it's the Astros in the West. But I think what's interesting is this might be, you know, like right now, talk about the AL East real quick. Boston 6-3. I don't see that being the thing moving forward.
Yeah,
we may have three teams coming out of the East, and we may have another three teams fighting to come out of the Central. You know, Houston's going to have to be really, really good, probably in second place in their division to try to make the playoffs, because Cleveland looks great, and we'll talk about, you know, the big blow to Cleveland in a little bit. Detroit. I don't know who had money on Detroit, but Detroit looks fantastic. Minnesota on paper looks really, really good. And, you know, their 3-4 record, again, it is early in the season. And then when you look at the AL East, the Yankees have looked incredible. Boston's looking good right now. Baltimore is what Baltimore is. I think they're the best team in the American League, if not the second best team behind Texas. And say what you want about Toronto. Listen, right now they're losing to the Yankees today, and they've lost two. If they lose today, they'll lose 2 out of 3. But yesterday's game, I mean, we're recording this on a Sunday. Yesterday's game was 6-2 in the sixth inning, Yankees lead. And it ended in a nail-biter, 9-8. They have a team that can mash, even though their starters have not been as great. They still got Vlad Jr. They still got Bo Bichette. They still got Biggio Jr. They still got a really solid order that can do some damage. And their pitching has been somewhat good. So if they're able to find, and we've seen what can happen with a prodigious offense. I mean, the Yankees have shown anything over the last couple of years is right. You can have a semi-decent pitching squad and a prodigious offense and still make the playoffs. And my thing is, I don't want to see that Toronto team in the playoffs. They're young. They're hungry. They don't have much to lose because they've got a lot of years left. I wouldn't want to be a team that sees Toronto in a wild card game.
So I don't know if Toronto – you brought very good points about Toronto. Toronto is very is a very young team. Toronto is pretty much a sleeper team. They're in the position where Tampa Bay is normally in for the AL East. Because what I'm seeing out of Tampa Bay right now, I know we're 9 games in, but what I'm seeing from Tampa Bay, it doesn't look like the Tampa Bay that I would normally be like, yo, you know what? You got to keep your eye on. Like there, it's something about them is not starting out too good. Maybe that changes throughout the season. Blue Jays has definitely taken that spot. Baltimore. I agree with you. Baltimore is probably going to be one of those teams in the AL that – it's going to run through. I think right now the East runs through them and the Yankees. It comes down to them. Boston is off to a great start. It's a better start than what I thought they were going to come off to. But I don't see Boston staying second place for long. I don't see that happening for too long.
I mean, when you look at this Toronto Blue Jays pitching squad, they've got Chris Bassitt, who's a pretty good number 3 pitcher. Right now he's their number 2 pitcher. You got Kevin Gausman, who's really, really good. Alek Manoah is on the injured list right now. When Alek Manoah comes back, he has the opportunity to be a frontline starter. So when you're going Gausman, Manoah, Bassitt, and then you've got Jose Berrios coming in number 4th, and Kikuchi, who might be one of the better international signings this year. You know, he's going to need some time to find himself. But when you got a guy like Kikuchi coming in as your 5 starter, not bad. Their relief squad does leave a little bit to be, you know, desire, but again, they're closers on the DL right now. Their number 1 relief pitcher in Eric Swanson's on the DL. Their number 1 catcher Danny Jensen's on the injured list. So you've got 4 out of their top 5 guys on the injured list, and you still got a team that has Vlad Jr., Kevon Biggio, Bo Bichette, Kevin Kiermaier, George Springer, and Justin Turner. And Turner's looking like he's finding himself again after a down year, down couple of years in LA.
Yeah. And I love that lineup. I really do. Bo Bichette is a very solid hitter. Vlad Jr. is Vlad Jr. I mean, there's nothing more I can say about him. And then you still got the guys who do the intangibles. You still, George Springer is not, he's not one of those guys that do the intangibles, but he's definitely somebody who comes up clutch. He's not going to be the big home run hitter, but he's definitely going to get you those singles and those doubles and those RBIs that you're going to need late in games. Yeah. So he's definitely, I'm sold on the Blue Jays. I'm definitely sold on them. I fear them, to be honest with you. If you go to the Central, I agree with you. Who had money on Detroit? Detroit is looking like $1 million right now. They're looking like they're going to possibly, we're doing way too early predictions today. But if you ask me now, let's just say going into August, where Detroit's going to be, Detroit can still be in second place or they can be ahead in the American League Central. They're that good. They're, from what I've seen, they're really that good. Cleveland is going to take a drop because they got a huge, huge loss in injury right now. So they're going to take a drop. Kansas City is going to be Kansas City. We're not even discussing them. Minnesota is probably going to be that team to fight for a wild card. And we know the White Sox, they took a major hit this winter, losing a lot of guys, Tim Anderson notably. And they're going to be
he hasn't been doing much for
where he hasn't been doing much there anyway. And Miami is 0-9, so he's in the right. So I mean, they really haven't lost much. But the Central, it's looking like it's Detroit's probably going to run away with the Central, if you ask me.
Yeah, and as you said, you know, and let's kind of, you know, let's put it out there. You know, Shane Bieber, you know, is likely going to be lost for the season. Yeah. He's going to need Tommy John. He's going to be out for the season. And we heard the same for probably the number one pitching candidate out in Atlanta. And Strider's going to likely be out for the season with UCL damage.
Yeah.
But, you know, Cleveland lost a huge thing. But here's the funny thing. If you're not a diehard baseball fan, if you're not a Detroit Tigers fan, you likely cannot name a starting position player for the Detroit Tigers.
Absolutely. Listen, I'll be the first one to tell you. I don't know. There's probably people if I look up the – as a matter of fact, just for shits and giggles.
There's a former Yankee, Gio Urshela, starting at third base.
I didn't even know Gio was there.
You've got Jake Rogers as their starting catcher, Spencer Torkelson as their starting first baseman, Colt Keith at second, Urshela at third, Javi Baez still in the league, starting at shortstop, Mark Anha in left field, Parker Meadows in right field, Parker in center field, Riley Green in right field, and Kerry Carpenter as their designated hitter. And outside of Kenta Maeda, who's got time in the major leagues as their number two starter, you probably can't name a starter on this team, even though their number one guy might be a
I have everything pulled up here now, and I'm looking at it, and I'm just like, half of the roster, I didn't realize even played for this team. So there's a lot to be said here. I'm definitely going to keep my eye on Detroit, and we'll see where it goes. Ask us this question again come August, you know, August going into September. But I got some I'm going to get into division leaders here. So we're sticking on the AL. I already got the Yankees and the Orioles. The East is going to run through those two teams. You could throw the Blue Jays in there as well, but we'll see what happens. I just think between the Yankees and Baltimore, they have two of the best complete teams, in my opinion. If you look at Baltimore, Baltimore won 101 games last season, 100 games. You've got Gunnar Henderson, who I expect to have another big year. You've got Corbin Burns. It's just this team is stacked. This team is so stacked, and
yeah.
I can't say anything more about the Baltimore Orioles. I don't like them as a Yankee fan, but I have to give them credit where credit is due, and this team is going to go far. On the flip side of it, the Yankees. I mean, us being Yankee fans, we're trying not to be as biased here. But pretty much the same guys. You've got Juan Soto, who's been a great addition. Great, great. He fits like a glove with this team. Aaron Judge. Alex Verdugo, who's finding his rhythm. Giancarlo Stanton, who's came in not swinging the bat as well. His batting average.
I mean, he's hit a grand slam today.
He hit a grand slam today. I saw the video. He hit a grand slam today, but you got to be consistent. Marcus Stroman, who pitched an absolute great game in the season, in the opener for the Yankees. You've got Oswaldo Cabrera, Luis Gil, who has now 7 Ks. I don't know if they took him out the game currently right now. Nestor Cortez really wasn't looking too good. Carlos Rodon, he was a little shaky in that first series, but he's coming around. This team, to me, is they're one trade away from being a real threat, to being a definite. So I don't know if that trade for you, I think that trade for me, in my opinion, is probably another strong pitcher. I know there was rumors.
I think the question is going to be really what's going to be the diagnosis of Gerrit Cole.
Yeah.
But the problem is Bieber falling down, Strider falling down, you now have a lot more competition for that pitcher because now you have the Braves just lost their number one starter. You have the Guardians just lost their number one starter. And now if the Yankees lose Cole for any extended amount of time, you now have three teams competing for the same quality of pitcher. This is the same thing we saw. Listen, we didn't get Jordan Montgomery.
Right.
We didn't get Blake Snell. and people might be celebrating this right now. We don't know how the season's going to end. We didn't get Yamamoto.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So we whiffed out on the three top pitchers on the market coming in.
Right.
And, you know, you think Yankee fans would feel a lot more confident about it if Cole was out. And listen, you and I both know this, and being lifelong Yankee fans, we you know, as fans of our other fandom, you know, everybody likes to call wrestling fans fickle. Yankee fans are probably the most fickle fans.
The most.
Because we will sit here and celebrate right now, right? Oh, we're 7-2. We're likely going to be 8-2 after today's game. We're 8-2. We're unstoppable. Have you seen this? Blah, 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 blah. Juan Soto's been great. But the minute Juan Soto goes 0-20 or has 3 or 4 games where he doesn't get a clutch hit or leaves men on base, or the day that Stanton goes 0-4, right? Stanton could go 0-4 tomorrow and get booed out the building. The man just hit a grand slam today, yeah. Right? You know, and we'll sit here and we'll celebrate this, and then we'll get to June, and Rodon is struggling, and Cortez is struggling, and then we get, oh, Gerrit Cole is going to be out for 3 more months. And Yankee fans will turn on a dime. Fire Boone, fire Cashman. Fire this guy. We should have known this. We've gotten 12 starters in the offseason. This and this and this. You know, everybody wanted to sit here and laud us getting Juan Soto, but I guarantee you, if our pitching squad implodes, everybody's going to be saying we wasted our time getting Soto because he might leave in a year when we could have gotten all these pitchers. But I thought you loved Juan Soto.
Yeah, I mean, you hit it on the head. Like, that's the fandom, and I think that's probably the one of the problems a lot of non-Yankee fans have with Yankee fans, because we get nice things, and it's just like we appreciate it one day, and then the next day when the struggles happen, it's just like, nah, get this guy out of here. Look, it's happened. It's gonna happen. It's baseball. It happens with every team. But the Yankees, for one, is championship or bust. And I feel like later on when we go deeper into this podcast, we're going to talk about in the later months, is this the year to win a championship for the Yankees? Now, me and you will probably say yes. More than likely, we'll agree on that. This is the year. Why? How everything's playing out right now, like you said, Cleveland losing Shane Bieber. That's a clear path right there. Detroit, who knows where they're going to be? Who knows when trade deadline comes around? What's going to happen? What moves are going to be made? Who's going to join this team? Whatever might happen. There's a lot of things going on. And then the West, who I have the Rangers going back, winning the AL West. It's really the Rangers to lose, to be honest with you. Like, it's open season right now in the AL. The AL right now runs through a couple of teams, but the Yankees are their own worst enemy.
And remember, Texas still has DeGrom coming back in August.
Right, right.
So a 100% healthy DeGrom hopefully coming back right before the playoffs kick off.
Right. So you've got DeGrom coming back. You have Scherzer. They're still going to be the team to beat, in my opinion, overall in the AL. But if you're going to break down by division, the Yankees are their own worst enemy, and the only way that they lose the AL East is if, one, the Blue Jays go on a tear and they make a big trade and go for a big swing to have more run support on bases, and if Baltimore comes out and gets another strong pitcher, whether it's a relief pitcher or if it's not – or a closer – that's going to be what sets Baltimore number one, and then the Yankees will be fighting for a wild card. Now, National League. Let's flip it on the National League side. National League. Of course, right now in the East, it's the Braves to lose. I think they're in the same position the Yankees are in, but they just have a better all-around team.
Yeah, but losing Strider, I think, listen, if you're the Philadelphia Phillies right now, you are chomping at the bit, because this is your opportunity to really listen. Spencer Strider last year was the guy who, I mean, in the beginning of the season, that man won me so much money on FanDuel because I'd just sit there and say over 8Ks any given game. And Spencer Strider was striking out 10, 11, 12, 13 a game. It was lockdown. It was one of those guys where, you know, Strider starting today. Oh, set it to autoplay. Braves will win it. Right? Didn't matter what offense Strider was going up against. So if I'm the Phillies right now, especially the way we're seeing Bryce Harper kind of round into form, how a lot of the other players are rounding into form, I think you're chomping at the bit right now if you're Philly. And hell, if you're the Mets, you're looking at this and you're like, we might have a shot.
Yeah, you do. The one thing I want to praise the Phillies bullpen, because I was watching the Phillies play. Excuse me. They played the Reds recently.
Yeah.
And I was looking at their bullpen and I did not, for anybody who's a Phillies fan, I will give you guys your respect. The bullpen is absolutely great. It's great. Bryce Harper is probably one of the best. I'll say this. Yankees have a rough start in first. Yeah, they did. Trust me. We're going to try not to be so Yankee heavy because we want to show love to everyone. But we will be critical of the Yankees. We will be critical of them.
100%, yeah.
Spencer Turnbull. Wow. I don't know if he just had a good night, but, man, pitched an incredible, incredible game. And in the rain at that, because it was pouring down rain that night that I saw that game. Pouring down rain, Spencer Turnbull did his thing. Bryce Harper was being Bryce Harper. I mean, the man's first hit was a home run. I think he had two or three home runs, including a grand slam. I mean, Bryce Harper, I mean, what more can you say about him? But one of my early picks for Cy Young, Zach Wheeler, who's, again, another person you talk about finding himself. Somebody who's really finding himself, you know, Mets fans are fearing this guy again. You know, it's crazy. I haven't seen his current ERA right now, but Zach Wheeler has been picked by, you know, okay, his current ERA right now is 0.75. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. It's really between him and my other pick for Cy Young is Zach Gallen for the Diamondbacks.
Gallen's a beast.
Oh man, he listen, I will humbly admit when the Yankees get flat out outplayed, and they got outplayed that second game when Zach Gallen was on the mound. Outplayed. It was a shutout 7-0. I think that was our first loss.
Yeah.
I listen, I get it. It happens. It's baseball, but that guy was just locked lights out at the mound. I got to pull up his stats now so I can show you.
And the funny thing is you talked about Philly, Zach Wheeler, the number one. Their real number one who's been struggling so far, Aaron Nola still is not in form.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You still got Aaron Nola. You've got Zach Wheeler. You've got Tyjuan Walker, who once he comes off the injured list, hopefully he regains his form. And you still got a very dangerous team with JT Realmuto, Bryce Harper, Alex Bohm, Trey Turner, and Kyle Schwarber, as well as Castellanos in the outfield. I mean, Philly is sneaky good. That's the interesting thing. Philly is sneaky good. They need some help in the starting rotation as well. But they're sneaky good. And if Harper is anything like the Harper he can be, they're dangerous.
Yeah, I compare them, and I'm comparing sports right now, but I'm comparing Philly to the Miami Heat. Doesn't matter where they are, give them a shot, they'll get there. And I think they proved that, when was that, 2 years ago, going to the World Series?
Yeah.
They proved that they were a wild card team. Listen, I agree with you. When they get on, if Bryce Harper can be the player that we know he can be, Zach Wheeler comes in and does his shutdown innings. You got all these guys hitting their stride, and their bullpen can come through for them, and their hitters can come through for them. They're a dangerous team in the National League. Very dangerous.
Yeah, and And again, we don't know who's going to be on the move this year as well. That's going to be a very interesting thing. Who's going to be in the move for the trade deadline, in the middle of the season? You know, you could have guys, you know, like Josh Bell, Pete Alonso, guys like that on the move. And I mean, while you don't think it's going to happen, you know, in division, it'd be very interesting. So I saw that Shep said something about the Yankees' first couple of series, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. So here's the thing. I'm not scared for the next series, Miami, at all, right? The Cleveland series, I'm a little less scared of now that Bieber's out. Right, the worst pitcher we have to deal with in that Cleveland series is Carrasco. Now, granted, we have Schmidt, Gill, and Cortez going in that series, so our pitching is, and that's the thing to me, the Yankees pitching staff, the starting five is what worries me the most. And you know what actually most upset me this week, Grizz? You know what really pissed me off?
What's up?
I believe there it's he's with Cincinnati now. Montas.
Yeah.
Great first game with Cincinnati.
I don't know what happened.
And then this is like Sonny Gray all over again.
Mm.
You know, you bring him in, supposed to be good, hurt, can't handle New York, leaves New York, regains form all over again. But I'm not really worried too much about Cleveland. We don't have to worry about Bieber, you know, and our team has been pretty good. Then we have the rematch against Toronto, this time in Toronto. And then we play Tampa Bay here in New York. So those are going to be two interesting series. But like you said earlier, Tampa Bay has not looked like Tampa Bay. Then we get a series against Oakland and then Milwaukee. Now, the Milwaukee series, I think, is going to be really interesting because Milwaukee's 5-2 right now.
I got a hot take about them. Let me tell you.
That's going to be an interesting series.
Yeah.
To me, it's the end of April, right? That to me right there is going to be the measuring stick for the Yankees, because from April 26th until May 5th, you've got 3 against Milwaukee in Milwaukee, 4 against Baltimore in Baltimore, and then Detroit comes to the stadium and you play Detroit, and then Houston comes to the stadium and you play Houston. So that set right there.
That's
where I'm scared, is that end of April set, that nice 11 games that we have to worry. The 3, 6, 9, 13 games that we really got to worry about right there. Everything else, I think we get some good things. Then right after that, we got Tampa Bay, Minnesota, Chicago, some teams that I'm not really expecting, Seattle. And then that West Coast trip, we kind of get to avoid the big dogs at first because we get the Angels, the Giants, and the Padres. And then June is where the big series comes in.
June is the Dodgers.
June is the Dodgers. Mm-hmm. It's at the stadium. Our first series against Boston.
Oh, froze a little bit. All right. Yeah, I agree with you. We're going to have a tough end of April going into May. It's going to be extremely tough, but it's going to show what this team is made of. And I think the most important thing that I'm going to watch is the bullpen. How are we going to look coming out the bullpen? What are the starters going to do what they're supposed to do? Marcus Stroman right now, he's doing great. A lot of Mets fans, you know, they have their reservations about him and, you know, he's a problem. He's this, he's that, you know, but so far he's been good for us. Carlos Rodon, we'll see where he comes into play. We'll see if Cortez can find his form back. We lost Loaisiga also to injury as well. I don't know how long he's going to be out. So, now Luis Gill is in rare form. He pitched very well today. So we'll see where the Yankees are going to be as far as pitching goes, because the one thing that the Yankees cannot give up, they cannot give up runs to these certain teams. And you can't, for the most part, you can't give up runs to Detroit. You can't give up runs to Houston. You can't give up runs to, who else are we playing? Miami is fine. I'm not really worried about them. Boston is another team, like, that's a rivalry game where it doesn't matter who's playing for that team. They can just, at a drop of a dime, be a different team because of that rivalry game. But Milwaukee, I got to tell you, Pete, Milwaukee, man, I like what I'm seeing from them. I really do. I like what I've watched them in the Mets, and I know the Mets aren't playing up to par, and I think there's a lot of in-house drama with the Mets, and we'll get to that as well. But what I'm seeing from Milwaukee, again, another team that's just a complete team.
That to me may be one of the most interesting divisions, the Central, because to me you've got three really good teams. To me, the team that I have the biggest eye on isn't Milwaukee, it's Pittsburgh.
Yeah, that's a shocker.
Pittsburgh's looked really, really good. But I also really like what I'm seeing out of, oddly enough, Cincinnati. Yeah. Also, to me, best named player in baseball this year in Martini.
Yeah. I know they had a couple of games that were a little rough for them. You know, little shaky starts here and there. Trying to pull up some stats here.
The biggest issue with the Pirates is their starting rotation is literally a who, right? You don't really know anybody in that starting rotation. Obviously you've got Aroldis Chapman as the setup guy over there in Pittsburgh, and they have a really decent team. I mean, they got Rowdy Tellez, they've got Ke'Bryan Hayes, who is going to be a star in this league. Mm-hmm. They've got Julio Cruz, who's also going to be a star in this league. Brian Reynolds, another one. Jack Suwinski, who is really good. And then, you know, the soft spot that I have for an Andrew McCutchen. They also have Yasmani Grandal as well, filling out that starting lineup. They've got a really good team, a really young team, but also has a good amount of veterans on that team to help lead them. I really like the way that Pittsburgh looks. And to me, the NL Central may be the most exciting division in baseball this year.
And it's funny that you say that, because last year it was a race for the NL Central.
Right.
It was like a really tight race. And that was
the Cubs. You had the Cubs involved. You had the Cardinals involved. And those are two teams that we don't look that good this year.
No. So just to give some numbers for the Central, you had the Brewers who were at 92-70. You had the Cubs that were 83-79. The Reds that were 82-80. And then the Pirates were 76-86, Cardinals are 71-91. Besides really the Pirates and the Cardinals, the Reds and the Cubs were pretty much fighting for position here.
Yeah. And the Pirates did look good. They really started to pull away at the end of last season. They started to come together, and the Cardinals fell apart midseason.
Right. So I agree with you. That's something that I'm really going to be paying attention to the National League Central. I love both teams, to be honest with you. They both write themselves, both have great young players. Players are going to carry, you know, baseball into the future, with Cruz on one end. And then when you get down to the West here, I mean, I'm looking at it. I mean, we all know the big bad Dodgers. They went out and got everybody this winter. It seems like they got everybody. You got Teoscar Hernandez over there. You got Shohei Ohtani joining for the record $700 million. Of course, he had a restructured contract. You still got Freddie Freeman. You've got Mookie Betts, who's looking like the NL MVP right now.
I mean, they have the only lineup in history with five MVPs?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's absolutely, you know, three MVPs in Ohtani, Betts, and Freeman. You know, you have multiple guys who can hit 30 home runs in a season.
Oh. Like, I don't, you can have multiple guys going for the 30-30, pretty much.
Yep.
Pretty much. You've and just to tell everybody here, you've got Shohei, you've got Yamamoto, you've got Betts, you got Hernandez, Teoscar and Enrique Hernandez, Tyler Glasnow, Freddie Friedman, Max Muncy. You've got so many guys. Will Smith, who re-signed. You've got so many guys on this squad that can just hit you from every angle, whether it's home runs, whether it's, you know, singles, doubles. The Dodgers, I hate to admit it as a Yankee fan, but they're a very scary team and you do not want to see them. But again, this is, again, the NL is there to lose. And with everybody, with at least with Atlanta losing Spencer Strider, like it losing their, one of their pitchers, it's wide open for the Dodgers. Now, again, I'll say my hot take with this. Yamamoto does not have to be even 50% of the pitcher that he is for the Dodgers to still be one of the top teams in the NL. He doesn't. And that might be, some people might say, well, you know, he has to be at least 50%. No, he doesn't. He doesn't have to be 50% for this team. He doesn't have to, his ERA does not have to be in the low twos. It doesn't even have to be mid twos. It could be in the fives. He could, his ERA could be at a 6, 620, 720. And they're still a great team. You're not going to, like, Yamamoto does not have to have shutdown innings every time he pitches. He doesn't have to be the best pitcher in the NL for this team to go all the way. Does he have to show up in the playoffs? Absolutely. Does he have to show up in the World Series? Absolutely. Yes. He has to show up when it counts. During the season, does he have to show up? Absolutely not. You have Mookie Betts, who is playing the best baseball of his career right now. You have Shohei Ohtani, who's now doesn't have to worry about pitching at the moment, but is designated hitter. You've got Tyler Glasnow, who we know at any drop of a dime can be a decent to good pitcher. Freddie Friedman is going to be Freddie Friedman. You have so many guys on this squad that will show up at any given moment. It doesn't have to be, we depend on this guy. To put it into layman's terms, it doesn't have to be Aaron Judge, where we're depending on Aaron Judge to hit home runs. We're always looking for Judge. No, these guys don't always have to look for Shohei to show up. They have Mookie. They don't have to worry about, you know, if Freddie is not on one day, it might be Teoscar. If it's not Teoscar, it's Enrique. If it's not Enrique, it's Max. They have so many different guys that can show up for them at any given time, which is why the West runs through the Dodgers. I know the Giants have got significantly better. They've got guys in there. I don't think the Giants are going to be as good this season. Give them, I'd say, give them till next year. Give them till next year. I still think they need another big bat. They have the pitching. Maybe they can go after another closer. Because I'm a firm believer of, you have a good closer, you have a great team. That's
just, oh yeah.
But,
and there's going to be a couple of closers on the move. In fact, you want to talk about closers who should be on the move? Can we get rid of Clay Holmes?
Yes, yes, yes. I think I understand. Okay, so just to talk about the Juan Soto trade. I know we're kind of all over the place, but we're on the topic of closers here. To talk about the Juan Soto trade, Michael King going to the Padres. I understand why you did it. To be honest with you, Yankee fans are kind of split down the middle. I think more Yankee fans now that the season has started and we've seen what Juan Soto is doing for us, we're okay with the trade because a lot of people were split. A lot of people were like, oh, we gave up too much. We gave up too little.
For a guy who's going to be a free agent at the end of the year.
Right. I feel like we got Juan Soto for an absolute steal. That's just me. Michael King on the move. I like Michael King as our closer. Sometimes he was a relief. I would have liked to kept Michael King. I think he's a better pitcher than Clay Holmes, in my opinion. But Clay Holmes cannot find the strike zone to save his life. He just cannot. So if we can get something in return for Clay, absolutely. Put him on the move. Put him on the move. Who do you see? If that goes down, who would be our closer in your opinion?
This year it's tough because there's not really a lot of options in that bullpen, and some of the better options are not going to get traded to the Yankees. Mm-hmm. But when I'm looking at who are guys who are out there, right? When I'm looking at, I mean, honestly, if Loaisiga wasn't hurt, I'd like for Loaisiga to be the closer.
Right.
But if you look at the guys who are out there as relievers who might be available, I mean, Jansen's going to be a free agent at the end of the year.
Right.
Presley's going to be a free agent. Kimbrel has an option that is out there. I would not be opposed, and I know people are going to hate this, to bringing back Chapman on a free agent year. Right. Things like that. There aren't, and here's the thing, there aren't really a lot of great closers like there were before. So it's tough. You know, Clay to me just pitches too much to contact. Clay does not have the kind of shutdown stuff that you should have as a closer, in my opinion. I don't want anybody painting corners. I don't want anybody playing around with off-speed stuff unless it's something that's absolutely nasty. Don't get me wrong. You've got an unhittable curveball. You can be my closer, right? Listen, Mariano had one pitch. Yeah, you knew what was coming every single time.
You just couldn't hit it.
Right? You've had guys who were closers who had an unhittable changeup. You knew what was coming. You couldn't hit it. Right. But, you know, I want a guy who's going to go in there, who's going to attack their best hitters, attack whoever's coming up, and it's just going to be unhittable. And that's why Chapman was so great. The biggest issue with Chapman was his control and the fact that, you know, he would just sputter out every once in a while. You know, I don't need a guy who can throw 100, but give me a guy who can throw 90 and make it unhittable.
Right? Yeah.
And that's what made. That's what made John Smoltz such a great closer, right? John Smoltz threw with speed, and he threw with power, but it was just unhittable. You weren't hitting it. It's what made Hoffman a great closer. If you look at a lot of closers, anybody who's ever played a baseball video game, you know, your closers usually are coming in with two pitches.
That's it.
Maybe three if you're getting one of those top closers. Eric Gagne had one pitch. That was it.
That was it.
But it needs to be the most effective pitch in your arsenal. And that's what we just don't see that out of these guys nowadays. And you're also seeing these guys used a lot more often. Two inning saves just aren't it for me. You know, so that's the big thing with relievers. And to me, that's the biggest problem for a lot of teams, even the beloved Dodgers. To me, the biggest issue that the Dodgers have is their relief. They have a great starting rotation.
Mm-hmm.
They have an incredible lineup. But if for some reason you could get into that bullpen, you might have a chance.
And I think that problem got exposed in the Korea series. I think that's where that got exposed. That was Yamamoto's first game. Let me pull that up real quick. I think that got exposed right then and there and I agree with you. That's probably going to be their main issue. Yeah, the Padres won 15-11.
I mean, you're going to have to mash to get past the Dodgers regardless.
Yeah. Yeah, you're going to have to put up runs. And look how many pitchers they use. They use what? They went deep in their bullpen. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. They used about 7 guys. You know, Yamamoto pitched one inning. You had Michael Grove come in. Then you had Kyle Hurt come in. Then you had Alex come in. Ryan Yarbrough. JP came in. There's a lot. So I agree with you. For the Dodgers, in order for you to beat the Dodgers, and I think people are starting to see this, you have to hit against them. You have to hit. You've got to come out hitting. Now, that doesn't mean get away from your mechanics for any team that plays them. Doesn't mean don't have plate discipline, because if that's the case, you're going to lose. But you have to hit these guys out the building. That's what's going to get them off their stride. And if they have to go deep into their bullpen, they're not going to last that long. They're not. And I think that's one of the Achilles heels of this team. Now, again, not wishing bad on them, but if somebody goes down, you know, let's just say a Mookie Betts goes down, or, you know, a Shohei goes down, even though he's not really doing much. You got guys that go down. That's a different story. Now we're looking at a completely different team. Will they still be at the top of the NL West? Absolutely, because the NL West, to be honest with you, that division is not as good. You know, you've got the Padres, who right now are number two, but I don't see them lasting that long at number two. Of course, the Angels are there as well, but I don't see them coming back as well. I just don't see it. You've got a lot going on, but I think that if they can stay healthy and their bullpen gets deeper, they're a team, they're a threat in the NL. They're a threat already, but they'll even be more of a threat. Let's move on to expectations real quick, right?
Yeah.
So we got some expectations for some teams. I think we've already alluded to it. The Yankees can be the king of the AL East. But we gave props to the Blue Jays and Baltimore that they can be right there nipping at their heels. Those are two very good teams that can definitely be there.
I'm going to get canceled by a lot of Yankee fans today for some other stuff I'm going to say, but I'm going to probably get canceled by the rest of them for this. I don't have the Yankees winning the AL East.
Okay.
I've got Baltimore being the number one team in the AL East. I think they're outside of injuries, outside of something happening. And again, you don't wish that on anybody. I think they have probably the most complete team in the AL East. The Yankees, to me, still have too many issues. We don't know what's happening with Cole. Don't know if Cortez is going to be consistent. We don't know if Rodon is going to be consistent. So right there, you've got 3/5 of the starting rotation that is just too many question marks for me. And you've got an offense where Stanton's still hitting. I mean, granted, he's hitting today, but Stanton's still hitting, you know, barely over 200. Judge has started kind of slow. You know, you don't know what you're going to get out of that offense sometimes. And, you know, if Juan Soto and Glaber and, you know, Rizzo was hurt last year. You hope Judge stays healthy. You hope Stanton stays healthy. You hope Soto stays healthy. There's just too much to me in terms of like hopes. You know, I'd like to see Jason Dominguez come back and be a force.
I was just about to mention him.
Yeah. You know, there's too many infield errors to me. You know, that team still playing at third base and shortstop with Volpe and them. Still too much for me there. I think the Yankees can be very good. And if this opening, you know, series starts of the season has been any indication, they can be very good. I just don't know if they are the number one team in the East. I've got Baltimore winning the East. I've got Yankees coming in second, if all things hold consistent.
Okay. I can't argue that. But we'll have to see again where trade deadline goes and, you know, if the Yankees take a swing at getting another starting pitcher. Because I think the one thing – not much out there. It's not much out there. But I think the one thing me and you have been constantly critical about with the Yankees is the bullpen. So the bullpen is what's going to make or break us this season. And losing Gerrit Cole was a big shot. We already had questions about the bullpen even when they were healthy. But now it's like you're losing your Cy Young, who I had Gerrit Cole penciled in to be back-to-back Cy Young award winner for the AL. He can still cover that ground if he comes back in a decent time. But we don't know what kind of Gerrit Cole we're going to get. We don't know what's going to happen. Again, I agree with you. Baltimore, a complete team. Complete team from infield, outfield, bullpen. Everything is very complete about this team. So we'll see what happens.
And they have a guy that I think, in my opinion, has an outside shot of winning Rookie of the Year, and that's Jackson Holliday.
Yes. Yes. Very high on him as well. I've been watching a lot of Jackson Holliday highlights and seeing him, he fits very comfortably in that system. So big expectations for him. I'm going to switch. We're going to go. Let's go top of the NL. So overall, top of the NL, who's your number one? And it's hard. It's hard.
It's hard because if you'd ask me this question, if you ask me this question on paper, it's the Dodgers, right?
Right.
Without question.
Right.
If you'd asked me this question a couple of days ago, I would have said it's between the Dodgers and the Braves. It's tough because there's a large part of it that doesn't want to say the Dodgers, even though I think the Dodgers are going to run away with the National League. I want to say another team, but again, we don't know who's going to survive. Is this an aberration out of Pittsburgh and Milwaukee? Are Milwaukee's rookies really going to continue to carry them through the season? Can Arizona or San Diego overtake? Are the Dodgers going to fall? I don't know. But based on just what we have, I think without question, it's the Dodgers. You still haven't seen much out of, you still haven't seen Walker Buehler. You still haven't seen, some of the other aspects of this team. I think right now the Dodgers are the number one team in the National League. Unfortunately, I think, things have just been made easier now that you've had Atlanta losing Strider.
Yeah. I think it definitely makes it a lot easier. It's definitely a clear path for the Dodgers. We'll see. Maybe somebody steps up on this Atlanta team. Chris Sale finds a second coming. You still got Charlie Morton over there. You still got AJ Minter. So there's a lot of people that can step up and maybe shock everybody. So we don't know just yet. But I will say this, it is between them and Atlanta, for sure. But if you ask me, if you want me to give you a clear-cut winner, I do believe it's the Dodgers. But let's not forget, the Dodgers were at the top of the NL, and we saw what happened last year. So anything can happen in this game. So those are the two for the top of the AL. Top of the AL, you pick Baltimore, I say the Yankees. You have for the NL, I think we're both in agreement, either between Atlanta or the Dodgers, but yeah. I think the clear cut winner is the Dodgers for right now. I do have another expectation, which is again, another hot take that I have. I think the Mets, flipping over to the other New York team, I think the Mets are going to lose Pete Alonso. And I think that's a lot of what's going on right now with the Mets. There's a lot of controversy, a lot of drama with the Mets around Pete Alonso. I think they're not focused on that. I know there's rumors of maybe a crosstown swap where the Yankees might go after Pete Alonso and the Mets are trying to go after Juan Soto. There might be a crosstown swap. Forgive me if there hasn't been anything like that ever, but there might be not a trade, but just free agent swaps. I don't know if that's going to go down. We don't know just yet, but I do see Pete not being with the Mets next season. Definitely, for sure.
Listen, if Alphonse was here with us today, he would have launched into a rant on how David Stearns is trying to kill the Mets, and David Stearns is going to get rid of Alonso. Here's the thing, and I said this to Alphonse one day talking about this same exact thing. I think there's an emotional attachment to Alonso that does not match his production and or play.
Yeah.
And that's something like you and I, as Yankee fans, can understand because for a long time, we've had
I got you.
There we go. We've dealt with that with some of like the legacy Yankee players as well, where it's just like how much do you give them? I don't know if Alonso's going to be worth the contract that he's going to want, especially that Boris is going to want, because, again, we're talking about the contract that Freddie Freeman got. We're talking about other contracts that other players have gotten. Mm-hmm. The problem is the emotional connection to Alonso, because he's a Met guy from the very beginning. Like, it's tough, and I get that they want to keep him, but would losing him be – listen, if I'm the Mets and you know you have no plans to keep Pete Alonso, my thought process is trade him. Get something for him. Because if you don't, you're going to screw yourself over, because he's going to walk.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think you, for what it's worth, you get something in return. Like you said, the Mets have no plan right now. And then if you look at the trade market right now, there's really nothing out there. So you're probably going to get another rental, more than likely, maybe a two-year rental at max for any player that you might get back, whether it's pitching, whether you get prospects, whether you get any infield player, outfield player, whatever you might get in a trade for Pete Alonso, you're going to get rentals.
Yep.
So would you rather have Pete Alonso, you're getting something in return for Pete Alonso, whether it be a two-year, maybe a three-year of rental, or you're going to let Pete Alonso walk for free where you're basically getting nothing in return? And honestly, you have, looking at this Mets team right now, it notable names here, notable names, and it's not a bad team, but the thing, the controversy and the drama around it is basically, like you said, the attachment, the emotional attachment that Mets fans have. And I get it. It's like us with Aaron Judge. We went through the same thing 2 years ago when Judge was in his contract year. We went through the same exact thing. Where's he going? Is he going to stay with the Yankees? Does he want to stay with the Yankees? You know, then the whole, he's getting on a plane to go to San Francisco. Well, he's from San Francisco. San Francisco's going to offer him this kind of money. The Yankees need to match that offer or go higher. Listen, we get it. We felt what you felt. But I agree with Pete. You get something back for Pete Alonso in return. This team has no plans. And it's sad because you're coming off of what? You're a fourth place team last year. The year before, you won over 100 games the year before. So somewhere along the lines, something happened, and not much changed with the team. You still have Lindor. You still have Alvarez. You got Edwin Diaz back. You got Brett Beatty. You added Luis Severino. So, I mean, on paper, you look like a team that can be a force in the East, but there are teams that are better than you. And unfortunately, you're in the same division as Atlanta, who's still a very good, complete team. You're in the same division as the Phillies, who doesn't matter where they are, you give them a shot, they're there. So, I mean, it's a slippery slope, but if you truly do not have plans for this team, I say trade them. Get what you can get for them, and you just start the rebuild process.
And you've got some players out there next year. I mean, listen. I know he's getting up there in age, and people are going to look at me like, why the hell would we go get him when he's like X amount of years older than Pete Alonso? Paul Goldschmidt is a free agent next year.
Yeah. Still hitting great.
And if I'm the Yankees and Rizzo's walking next year and I have an opportunity to get Goldschmidt for a year or two and plug him into that lineup, a professional hitter, and I'm able to keep somehow Juan Soto, and I have Aaron Judge, and now I've got a Jason Dominguez, an Austin Wells, an Aaron Judge, a Juan Soto. Oh, and let's plug Paul Goldschmidt in there, who's going to give me gold glove defense at first base, and he's going to be a professional hitter. You know who Goldschmidt reminds me of? Goldschmidt reminds me of the Yankees going and getting Tino Martinez. Goldschmidt reminds me of the Yankees going out and getting John Olerud. Goldschmidt reminds me of the Yankees going out and getting a Paul O'Neill from Cincinnati that plugs into the middle of their lineup and is just a professional hitter. That's what it reminds me of. That's the kind of move Goldschmidt to the Yankees would remind me of. And if you get him on the Mets, you know, You're able to save money, mm-hmm. right? You're able to save money, and you're able to get a guy who you know you can plug in and get very good production of, and then go get other players that you're going to need because you need other players on that team.
Yeah. Again, everything that you said, correct. I mean, the only thing going against Goldschmidt is his age. That's the only thing that's going against him. Everything else, numbers have been very much very productive. He is as solid as a first baseman as you can get. And if you plug him into this Mets squad with a Francisco Lindor, with a Brett Beatty, with a Jeff McNeil, with all of these guys, a Brandon Nimmo, when you plug him into this squad, it fits. And I agree with you. Plugging him into a Yankee squad as well, it's going to give us that, which I'm going to throw to you in a minute, that core four mentality. We're going to get that again with a Judge, a Soto, a Garrett Cole, if you want to throw Garrett Cole in there, and Goldschmidt, who right now, his age is the only thing that's going against him, but the batting average is there, the defense is there. Everything is very much productive still with Goldschmidt. So I humbly agree with you. But as far as going back to the Pete Alonso thing, I just feel like the Mets are in a position where they want to trade him. They're just not going to because they're going to get their money's worth out of him, win or lose. And breaking news, the Mets just won. They just beat the Reds 3-1.
Hey!
But you're going to get production out of Pete Alonso one way or another.
Damn if they do, damn if they don't, Chris.
Yeah, basically. That's basically all I was going to say. It's damned if they do, damned if they don't with Pete Alonso, because either way, it's successful. In their eyes, it's successful. Because if I sit up here and have Pete Alonso, I still have one of the top, maybe I'll extend it to 25. I have one of the top 25 players in the MLB right now in Pete Alonso. And I still have them. I can say, hey, at least I had them. That's what the Mets are looking at. But Mets fans, and speaking of this, because the Yankee fans have gone through times of mediocrity, Mets fans are tired of mediocrity. And I don't blame them. I'm tired of it for them, to be honest with you. And I'm not the biggest Mets fan. But I'm tired of the mediocrity. They get the players. They get the closers. They get everything for them. Again, like I just said, they went 101 games tied with Atlanta 2 years ago. So that's a big drop off from 2 years to, well, now where you're starting, 3-6 now that you just won? So, I mean, it's hard. And I understand Mets fans' frustrations, especially when everybody in your division, including the Nationals, excluding Miami. But when you look at the Braves and the Phillies and you look at these two powerhouses and you're like, why can't that be us? And it could be you. It really can be you. So now, sitting now, you're playing over 300 now. You're tied with the Nationals for third place now, as of today. Yeah. And the Nationals aren't that good of a team either.
No, they're probably the bottom of the barrel in the NL East, I should say.
Correct. So for you to sit here and you guys can make that jump and take over from the Nationals, I don't see why the Mets can't fight for a wild card spot this year if all goes right.
Right, and again, you got some great news with Strider going down.
Yeah, absolutely. I think. And that's the ripple effect of everything that's going on right now. You have an opportunity to go after that wild card spot, but it's yours to lose. You know, it's going to be hard when the season series of playing Atlanta, playing the Phillies.
Yeah,
it's going to be hard. Those are rivalry games. It's going to be hard to win those, but you got to be able to split in those in your division. You have to, if you're playing a four game season,
you've got to be able to beat Miami.
You've got to beat those two teams. But when it comes down to the Braves and the Phillies, at best, you want to split. If you're playing a four game series, you want to go 2-2.
Yeah. Or yeah, you gotta get something out of it. But again, you know, just to go back to this thing with Alonso, right? The Mets are damn if they do, damn if they don't. We spoke about this last year with Judge, right? If they trade him, their fan base is going to crucify them for getting rid of Alonso. Oh, right. How do you know you wouldn't have kept him? How do you know you wouldn't have been able to re-sign him? Why didn't you try to re-sign him, right? But then if they take him to the end of the season and he goes into free agency and he leaves, they're going to get crucified for not getting anything for him.
Right.
You know, so like you said, and I 100% I'd rather go, like, listen, if I'm David Stearns right now, I'm going to Pete Alonso, I'm going to Scott Boras, and I'm saying, listen, this is the offer. This is it. It's not going to change at the end of the season. Here's the offer we're going to give you at the end of the season.
Mm-hmm.
And I would, listen, I'd tell Boras straight out, I get your whole, like, oh, I don't negotiate during the season, but put the shit aside.
This is the offer. This is what's going to happen. That's
right. It. Either let us know now if you're going to take it or you'd be interested in taking it, or the plan is we're going to be looking at options. And if they tell you that he's not taking it, go look for options. Because at the end of the day, Boras is going to try to hang you up for every dime he can get.
Mm-hmm.
But I would just say, listen, it's this or we're going to look into trading you. Very simple.
That's it. That's it. And I think that's the mentality the Mets have to have as an organization. It's, listen, we're going through a rebuild process. You know, we have the players here, but we're going to rebuild this and we're going to get what we can get for you. There's guys that you don't even have to sit up there and say there's guys that we're looking at as far as free agency in 2025.
Right.
But it's, look, this, I agree with you. This is the offer. We're going to offer you X amount of money. And this is what it is. It's not going to change at the end of the season. Come September, October. It's not going to change. It's not going to change in December. This is what it is. It's either you take it or we'll offer you to be traded at the deadline or whenever you want to be traded. If you want to play out the rest of your contract, we'll let you walk away in free agency, whatever it is. But
No, we're going to trade you and we're going to get the best offer. That's it. Because here's the problem. If Boras controls that narrative, you're screwed. You need to control the narrative. We're going to trade you for what we need. We're going to trade you for the best offer for us. And that's what a lot of people got to remember, right? We're going to trade you for the best offer for us. We have to benefit off of this, right? Mm-hmm. And this is why I understood why you had teams in other sports, in the NBA, in the NFL, who didn't want to trade certain players, right? This is why, you know, everybody was talking about Portland not trading Dame Lillard. Lillard wanted out. He said he wanted out, and they weren't trading him. They were holding him hostage. No, at the end of the day, the team that is trading you, you are still under contract with me.
Right.
Now, in the terms of Alonso, you got to get what you can get, but you still got to get what's best for you as a team, because I'm not going to let you walk away and I get nothing out of this deal.
Right.
Or I have to blow up my team. You know, the other way, if I'm trading for you, I don't want to have to blow up my entire team to get you. And then you end up falling aside. So Grizz, I said earlier, I was going to alienate a couple Yankee fans.
Yeah.
So I've been a Yankee fan for as long as I can remember. I mean, of course, I grew up in the 90s dynasty, but I saw 94. I saw 95. I saw the heartbreaks. I remember the Bronx Zoo Yankees of the 80s, the late 80s, early 90s. I remember when it wasn't great. Okay. But I hate every single time, and I got reminded of it in spring training, and then when I saw MLB The Show 2025 talking about you can play as members of the core four in the new Yankees, in the new Derek Jeter standalone part of the game.
Right.
you know, mind you, I remember, and this is how far back I go, I remember when Tony Fernandez played shortstop for the Yankees. Okay. You can't talk to many 90s Yankee fans who even know who Tony Fernandez is.
Right.
But in everybody talks about the core four. Jeter, Posada, Pettit, Mariano. I love all four of those guys. In fact, when I played baseball as a pitcher, the Yankee pitcher that I always wanted to be the most like was Andy Pettit. I used to be the guy who would sit on the stand on the mound when I was in high school playing baseball, and I'd have the glove right below my eyes. I'd be doing the whole Pettit stare. It was what it was. Everybody wanted to emulate the Jeter throws. I get it. But I want to know, why do we keep disrespecting Bernie Williams? Because to me, it's five. It's Bernie, it's Jeter, it's Posada, it's Pettit, it's Mo. Those are the five homegrown Yankees. And a lot of people like to say, oh, well, they're the core four because they came up together in 95. And here's the funny thing. They were called the Fab Five for a while. And then all of a sudden, revisionist history changed it to the core four because Mo, Pettit, Jeter, and Mariano stayed for the 09 championship. Pettit left, ladies and gentlemen. Do we forget that Andy Pettit pitched in Houston? Right? Led Houston to a World Series.
Yep.
Okay. Bernie Williams, to me, the only four of those Yankees that he's less important than is Jeter and Mo. That's right. I rank Bernie Williams as more important to the 90s Yankee success than Posada. And if you don't, you're an idiot, because Posada didn't really become a major part of the team until 98, and that was in the regular season. But in the postseason, in both 98 and 99, he was not the starting catcher. Okay. He played 111 games in 1998, but Girardi was the catcher in the playoffs. 99, who was the starting catcher? Girardi in the playoffs. But Posada was the starter during the regular season, but I rank Bernie well above Posada. I even rank Bernie above Pettit to a degree, because of how valuable Bernie was for us. And if we want to go even further and talk about just overall most important Yankee players to the dynasty, I don't understand why we don't talk about Paul O'Neill in the way that we should. Paul O'Neill does not get the amount of respect. O'Neill and Bernie are probably two of the most vital Yankees to the Yankee dynasty outside of Mariano Rivera and Derek Jeter.
Yeah.
And if you disagree with me, something's wrong. Posada, is he great? Yes. Pettit, is he great? Absolutely. I have a number 40, 46 jersey. I have a 2 jersey. I have a 20 jersey. Okay, and I have what I need, but I have a 51 jersey and I have a 21 jersey, because Paulie and Bernie were just as important, if not more vital, to the Yankee dynasty and what we all stand on as Yankee fans and say, this is why the Yankees are great. This is why, okay, it's championship or bust for the Yankees.
Absolutely.
It's because of them. It's... And this revisionist history about Posada and Pettit, because they all came up in 95 and they spent the minor leagues together, and then they left in 09. Listen, Bernie was older. Bernie left in 06. O'Neill retired when he retired. But I'm going to tell you right now, there is no 1996 World Series without Paul O'Neill and Bernie Williams. There is no 1998 World Series without O'Neill and Bernie. There is no 99. There is no 2000 without Bernie Williams and Paul O'Neill. And if you want to go even further, how we aren't even in the conversation in 2001 if it isn't for guys like Tino.
Mm-hmm.
If it isn't for guys like Paulie. If it isn't for guys like Bernie. We're in the conversation in 2001 to possibly win our fourth in a row because of those guys.
I mean, looking at the stats here, this 96 for Bernie Williams. You had 143 games played, 551 at-bats. You had 168 hits, 102 RBIs. Like, come on, man. Look, what are we saying here? 96, he had 29 home runs. 17 stolen bases. I mean, you can't get any better than that.
Right. And you look at a guy like Paul O'Neill, who hit 19 home runs and had a 91 RBIs,
mm-hmm.
you know, for the Yankees in 96. And then if you look at 98, the big year that everybody talks about, 24 home runs, his second most in his career, because he hit 28 in 1991 with the Reds. But 24 home runs, 116 RBIs, playing 152 games. In 99, he played 153, had 19 and 110. And in 2000, he had 18 and 100.
Yeah. I mean, you can't get any more production than that. So I'd take it a step further, and I wouldn't even say Fab Five or Core Four. I don't know what you call it, but all six of those guys are very vital to why the Yankees have the championships that they have during that run. You can't get any more vital than that. The numbers don't lie. And I agree with you. Bernie Williams definitely needs a lot more respect in that aspect. Paul O'Neill needs a lot more respect in that aspect as well. We talked about it earlier with certain baseball players, certain people that do the intangibles. These guys did the intangibles. Yeah, we saw the great plays from Jeter. We saw the great plays from Andy Pettit. We saw the great plays from the great closing from Mo and Posada stepping up, you know, being the RBI hitter that he was. But you also had Paul O'Neill. Like we said, 116 RBIs.
Oh, man, 10 games. Can we talk about 1998? Can we talk about 1998 when Bernie Williams became the first player to win a batting title, Gold Glove, and a World Series ring in the same year?
Same year.
You know, and Bernie's postseason stats, if we look at Bernie's postseason stats in the 1996 playoffs, okay, the man had three doubles, six home runs, 15 RBIs, 10 walks, hit 345 in the 1996 playoffs. The 1998 playoffs, he was neutralized a bit. He only hit 188. Okay. He had one home run, eight RBIs. But then the 1999 playoffs, he came back. Okay. Played in 12 games, hit 273. And then in the 2000 playoffs, okay, had 17 hits in 16 games. And hit 279. And if you want to go even further, in 2003, okay, when the Yankees almost did it again, when the Yankees lost to that's the year we lost to Florida.
Yeah.
Okay. He hit 318 with two home runs, 10 RBIs, and 21 hits in 17 games. He almost hit 300 in 11 games in 2004. He hit 296. Okay, and that was the last major postseason for him. He did play in 05 and 06, but he only had played five games in 05 and one game in 06. So when you think about it, I mean, listen, Bernie, there is no Yankee dynasty without Bernie. And a lot of people will say, if you're any kind of Yankee fan, that the Yankee dynasty really starts because of the trade to bring Paul O'Neill to the New York Yankees. And again, we could go further. How many World Series were saved because of Tino? How many World Series were saved because of, you know, Scott Brosius?
Yeah.
You know, granted, Brosius and Tino aren't going to get the same kind of recognition, but when we're talking about guys like Bernie and Paulie, they need to be in that conversation, in this core four conversation about 2009. Keep it in 2009. But when we talk about the Yankee dynasty, I don't want to hear core four.
No.
At the very least, I want to hear Fab Five. I want to talk about Paul O'Neill. I want to talk about Bernie Williams. And cancel me as a Yankee fan if you want, but it's the damn truth about Bernie and Paulie, and they don't get the type of respect that they should. And I love Posada. He's a fellow Puerto Rican, but I'm going to tell you right now, Bernie Williams and Paul O'Neill are ranked a lot higher to me than Posada is when we talk about that Yankee dynasty.
Yeah, absolutely. Hit it on the head for sure. So I guess we're about to wrap this up, but I'm going to give you guys, and I guess we're going to, I proposed this to the guys. I don't know if anybody wanted to chime in on this, yes. But I'm going to give you guys a game to watch for, we're going to try to do this every show. Everybody's going to pick one game out of the week. For me, it's tonight's game. It's the Houston Astros, Texas Rangers. That's tonight's game if you're not a wrestling fan, because, of course, you know, WrestleMania is on tonight. But that's definitely the game I'm going to pick for tonight. I will tell you the pitching matchup. I should have had it pulled up here. Texans versus Houston. We got on the mound tonight. I don't even think they submitted a card just yet. Okay, so they haven't submitted a card because it's not even pulled up here. But that's the game to watch tonight for me. I think that's Sunday's game, Sunday's big game of the night, which is the Texas Rangers versus the Houston Astros. So check out that game. Pete, what's the game for you? Did you got your eye on the night?
To me, I think tonight is an incredible game on the Sunday night, but I actually want to see, you know, I'm looking forward to Thursday night. I'm really looking forward to that Mets-Atlanta match. And people are like, what in the world are you looking at Mets-Atlanta? But to me, I really want to see whether or not the Mets are going to be able to make any headway. But if we really want to talk about a game of the week, and it's not too much for the pitching matchup, but really for me, it's the series of the week. It starts at the end of the week, starting on Thursday, and it's the Philadelphia-Pittsburgh series. That is going to be the first big test for this young Philadelphia, for this young Pittsburgh team, and for a Philadelphia team to see if really they have what it takes. And if you want to just go a step further, I'll give you a second series to watch. Also, a weekend series, and that's Milwaukee and Baltimore.
Yeah.
Those are the two series to me that are going to be key to watch this upcoming week. It's Pittsburgh, Philly starting on Thursday, Milwaukee and Baltimore starting on Friday. You have probably the four really young teams and three really young teams in Milwaukee, Pittsburgh, and Baltimore in probably one of their biggest early season tests. And Philly, this is going to be their chance right now. Can Philly take over where Atlanta is going to lose, or is Atlanta going to be able to push it a lot further? To me, those are the two series to watch this week. Again, Pittsburgh and Philadelphia starting on Thursday, April 11th, and Milwaukee versus Baltimore in Baltimore starting Friday, April 12th.
And Baltimore is a very good home team. So,
yes.
Well, this is going to be a true test for all teams involved. I'm going to tell you right now, I'm probably going to pick Baltimore in that series. Just off the strength of one, who comes out pitching, because I don't know who's going to start pitching just yet, but yep. Who comes off pitching and Baltimore's defense. I think it's going to be 100%. It's going to be close.
But again, this is that test for that young Milwaukee team. Can you put it together? Can you really put it together to go up against probably the best team in the American League East, but probably the best team in the American League? To me, Baltimore has to be the number one or number two World Series favorite outside of Texas to make the World Series in the American League.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Definitely agree. So I got my eye on them. And for us as Yankee fans, we really don't have too many series coming up that we can really get too excited about. We got Miami coming up.
Cleveland series.
The Cleveland series is probably our really one big test. I think we started out with a huge test already with the Astros. But I think our next big test would be Cleveland. And then going on the road to the Blue Jays. So those are the two teams that we really have to really, really be on the lookout for. But this was great. We got a lot covered. Check us out. We're going to try to find a steady day that works for everybody. But we will be back on here again, and we will have more topics for you guys, more baseball.
And if there's anything you want us to talk about, make sure to reach out to us.
Yeah.
Separately, reach out to your sports show as well. You can reach out to Dre, who's producing all this behind the scenes as well. Big Baby, big shout out to you. Big shout out to the sports show as well. Big shout out to the Backstage Brawl as well. Keep an eye on the Backstage Brawl. Everybody else, all of our podcast brothers and sisters that are out here, especially those at the Jobberteers Network that are out there killing it right now, WrestleMania weekend, doing a lot of work down there. But one thing that I'm going to start bringing in once all three of us are on here, I'm going to let you know, Grizz, we're going to have weekly baseball trivia.
I'm with it.
I'm going to throw one out here every week for you and Alphonse and for all of our listeners all around. But ladies and gentlemen, I am the voice of a generation, Pete Rosato. That's Big Grizz over there for our third, the Territorian Alphonse Stevens, everybody here at the Year Sports Show. This is the Dog Days of Baseball podcast. We'll see you next week. Until then, happy hitting.